Anthony Wright, good morning to you. How are you? Anthony, can you hear us? Anthony, I think you...
Sorry, Booker Tuff, I can hear you well.
There we go.
We started hearing the words of a song which I'd asked you to play, and maybe listeners will have the opportunity to listen to the rest of the song as well at some point. But the reason that I'd asked for that song, the song, by the way, is called Eret Tzvi. And the reason that I asked for that song to be played is because that is a song that was written at the time of just after the Entebbe mission. And for those listeners who might remember back to Entebbe back in 1976, that was the mission, an Air France plane was hijacked and taken to Uganda, to Entebbe, and the Jews were separated from the non-Jews, the passengers on the plane. The Jews were retained, kept by Palestinian terrorists in Entebbe, and in a most remarkable and fairy tale operation that took place, which still has the awe and the respect of the military world, Israeli commandos landed at Entebbe Airport and rescued the hostages that were being kept captive. And that song, Eretz Tzvi, was written straight after the mission to Entebbe, which, by the way, was called Mifts Yonatan, Operation Yonatan, named after Yonatan Netanyahu, Prime Minister Netanyahu's brother, who was the commander of the mission and who was killed at Entebbe, and the mission was named after him. And the first stanza of the song says, "At midnight they arose and struck at the edge of the world. Like angels they hurried to take flight, to return the honor of humanity." That's just the translation of the first stanza. So why am I talking about Eretz Tzvi and that song today? What's the link to what's happening these days to us? And the link links to the 12-day war in Iran, and in particular, Lieutenant Colonel in the reserves, Lieutenant Colonel A, we don't know his name, just his initial, and he is an Air Force pilot in the reserves who led the opening sortie of Operation Rising Lion. He was the first plane into Iran on that Thursday night, leading the flight to attack the anti-aircraft missiles and batteries in the first instance to clear the air corridor. And combat soldiers and Air Force pilots alike are generally asked to write a goodbye letter to their families before they go into combat, just in case they don't return, that there is a letter that is left to the family where that individual can set out what they were thinking just prior to going into combat. And Lieutenant Colonel A decided that he was not going to write a goodbye letter to his family. He refrained from that. And he decided that he would rather celebrate the experiences with his family. He was so sure that they were going to succeed that he didn't want to even go into the thought of having to write a goodbye letter to his family. And when he returned from the mission, he wrote the words of Eretz Tzvi on a piece of paper. And he said that these were the words that were going through his mind as he was flying into that dangerous, fateful mission. I was told he said that that he understood how dangerous the mission was, how important it was. He equated it to the mission to Entebbe. And those were the words going through his mind as he was flying the plane, being the first plane into Iran on that night. And when he came back safely, he wrote the words of the letter. In fact, he says, "During the days before, I didn't have the courage to write a farewell letter. I don't know why. Something inside me didn't let me focus on that. And I knew I would do everything to complete the mission and return safely. The greatest challenge I had was giving confidence and calm to the formation I was leading. At the end of the briefing, I chose to read a few words from the song I really love to the wonderful group with me. I kept this note in my pocket throughout the war, and I promised myself that instead of a farewell letter, I would send you to his family the note and the song when I return healthy and safe. Thank God we returned safely. So those were the words written on a piece of paper by Lieutenant Colonel A to his family that were handed to them after the end of the war. He kept that note in his pocket for the numerous sorties that he flew during the war. And then he gave it to them after the war to say, this was my note to you. And this has come to light, was actually made public by a member of Knesset who is a close friend of Lieutenant Colonel A. And Lieutenant Colonel A said he would agree to allow the note to be made public as long as it's not used for any political purposes. Let's be unified. Let's use it to unify us and not to divide us in any way. He himself is a kibbutznik from the north. That's what we know about him. And, of course, a senior Air Force pilot. But the link between the Operation Entebbe, which had just the most incredible success and was one of the most unlikely commander operations to have been launched in that time. And even now, 49 years later, it still has astonishing accolades about the way in which it was planned and how it was executed and some of the chutzpah, some of the audacity that surrounded that operation. That was what was going through Lieutenant Colonel A's mind as he flew to Iran. I think it's an incredible link. And by the way, the name Eretz Tzvi literally means the land of the deer. Why the land of the deer? Well, it's the land of Israel. But what's the link between the deer and Israel? Well, there is a biblical link. There was a book written about Eretz Tzvi relating to biblical halachot, to precepts that we are obliged to follow. And the concept of the tzvi is that it has a skin that stretches over the animal no matter what the size is. And that is equated to the land of Israel that stretches over all of the Jewish people, no matter how many they are. That's the link between Eretz Tzvi and Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. And of course, for the sharp-eared listeners who might have recognized that tune, the tune of the song has recently been popularized to recite the Tfilah L'Shlom Chayalei Tzva Hagana Israel, the prayer that is recited for the safety and the welfare of soldiers of the IDF.
Incredible. Absolutely amazing story. And thank you for sharing that with us, because it really brings us such an interesting personal perspective. Prime Minister Netanyahu will visit the White House next week on Monday. What do we know is likely to be the discussion?
Well, I think there are a lot of things on the agenda. I think, first of all, you had a discussion earlier about possibility of peace with some of our neighbors. And I know that President Trump has been throwing around that so many countries in the Middle East have now approached him to join the Abraham Accords, Syria and Lebanon. Even Iran's name was mentioned, Saudi Arabia, of course. So there is a certain feeling that there might be some progress in the case of certain countries wanting to join the Abraham Accords. We all have slightly differing views on how successful or unsuccessful that might be. You heard a slightly skeptical view a little earlier, but there is certainly a realization, I think, now that Israel is here to stay. I think up until now, there has been a certain thought that enemies of Israel may still succeed somehow, to destroy Israel and to remove her from the map. But I think in light of recent events, the October the 7th massacre, which caught Israel off guard, Israel's response to that and the strength which Israel has used to respond to that, the friendship that we've received from the United States, which came and went according to the administration that was in power at the time, the attack on Iran, which was so clinically carried out and so excellently executed in spite of Iran's claims of victory. All of that, I think, has made countries in the Middle East understand that Israel is not just a passing phase and Israel is not available to be removed from the map. And therefore, there might be some logic in accepting that as a fact, and not only accepting it, but potentially even befriending Israel and taking advantage of some of the things that friendship may bring. So I think that there is a certain begrudging acceptance in the Middle East now about a certain status quo, which is not going to change. And if there is anything which comes out of the last 21 months where we've been experiencing this very severe war situation, I think that that may well be one of the positives to understand that Israel is really not going away. In spite of having been caught in a weak moment, there is no way that Israel can be removed. So this move towards other countries being included in the Abraham Accords, I think, is unavoidable now, and I'm sure that there will be other countries who join. So that's certainly going to be on the agenda. Clearly, the situation in Gaza, the president has said on a few occasions that we need to reach a ceasefire, that we're advancing, that there is some progress. So I'm sure that that's going to be discussed. And interestingly, the IDF has made some comment over the last day or so that we are reaching the moment where we've achieved the military goals in Gaza, which I think means that there isn't a great deal more work to do for the IDF in Gaza. We've pretty much reached the limit of what we're able to do without reaching a political settlement. Unfortunately, that means some sort of an acknowledgement that we are unable to rescue our hostages alive. I think we probably do know where the hostages are being held, but we are very, very afraid that any attempt to try to rescue them may result in their deaths. And so therefore, a political solution is required in order to resolve this. I think that there is going to be a discussion around Iran and the nuclear program in Iran, which the Iranians are promising will be returned and that nobody will be able to stop Iran from enriching uranium. There is also the trial which the prime minister is undergoing, which President Trump has decided he should intervene. I also think that in the back of the prime minister's mind, he's wondering whether this wouldn't be a good time to call a snap election ride the wave of the success of the operation in Iran. And I have little doubt that that will come up for discussion. So I think that those will really be the main topics of discussion between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump. And one of the things that we all really hope is that the subject of the hostages will be at the top of the agenda, and that somehow the meeting on Monday will result in something magical, which will just allow us to return our hostages home. I think that really needs to be the most important item for discussion.
No question about that. Let's just talk about the Iranian Jewish community being under threat. I've got a lot of people have sent me messages, have sent to me WhatsApps, but it's very hard to understand or to get a sense of what is really going on there. What do we know?
Well, we don't know a great deal. I mean, the community in Iran, I understand, numbers around 15,000 people.
That's not a small number.
Which is not a small number. I mean, it was at one stage much, much larger than that. But I understand that today we're talking about around 15,000 people. And we know that the Iranian regime has always said over the years that they've got nothing against the Jews. They just have something against Israel. And of course, some of our ultra-Orthodox cousins have chosen to try to befriend the Iranian regime, the certain sects from New York in particular, to show that Jews are welcome in Iran, and they're all anti-Israel together, and they have this sort of common bond where they're anti-Israel, but they're Jewish, and therefore the Iranian regime has no issue with Jews. But the truth of the matter is that the Jewish community in Iran is under siege and is under threat, maybe not purely because they are Jewish, but also, and maybe mainly, because of the links that they have to Israel. Many of them have friends and family in Israel. There is a close connection between the Iranian Jewish community and the Iranian community, the Persian, the Parsi community, call them as you wish, who are in Israel and who are quite visible and number quite a lot of people. So there are very, very strong connections, even within Israel, to Iran, Jews who've managed to make their way here over the years and have strong connections with the community in Iran. The interesting thing is that we do see within the Jewish community public statements of support for the regime. And even a Jewish member of the Iranian parliament who has very publicly criticized Israel and shown himself to be anti-Zionist. And I just wonder to what extent this might be something of a facade in order to present themselves as an acceptable community to the regime and to the general public in Iran, just to somehow secure their survival and their safety in Iran, particularly in light of this anti-Israel feeling that obviously permeates right throughout the regime. So it's very difficult for us to know exactly what's going on deep down in the depths of the community, what their views about Israel are. They are clearly under siege. There are reports about dozens of them who've been arrested because of links that they might have to Israel. They are under suspicion for sure. There is certainly a sense of attack, a sense of danger, of threat to the community. And it's interesting to wonder what the Israeli government might be thinking about potentially helping those Jews who want to come out to come out. The problem is that they have a very good lifestyle. They're pretty wealthy and influential in business terms and are reluctant to suddenly pick up sticks and run away. And the problem is that if some of them choose to leave, then those who get left behind will be even more endangered than before. So it's either an all or nothing situation. So all in all, it seems a very, very tough situation. And I'm not sure that we really know all the ins and outs of it.